Would you like to double your profit, lower your stress? If you're a business owner, if you're somebody who ever wants to start a business in your life, or maybe you're just a sole contributor, a self-employed 1099, or maybe you're just a W-2 employee and you're thinking about doing something like this maybe one day, but you're unsure of where to start, I just wanted to discuss different strategies that I've used to grow Student Loan Planner that I wish I knew when I started it 8 years ago that could really dramatically help you make more money and have more fun being your own boss. And that's kind of a really amazing goal that a lot of people have. Kind of a quick example, I've been working on some occupation-specific resources this past few weeks, and I did a calculator specifically for dentists. I'm working through dentists, veterinarians, physicians, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to just pull up some of the dashboard information because I think it's like pretty staggering. I looked up, okay, net worth for associate dentists in our financial planning group is about $314,000. But for practice owners, for business owners, instead of $314,000, their net worth is, get ready, $880,000. Almost triple. Almost triple. Incomes for employed dentists in our planning group is about $196,000. Practice owners, about $271,000. You know, that is a lot higher income, and that's resulting in a lot higher net worth. So first of all, if you're thinking maybe you want to be a business owner, I would highly encourage it. I don't think that you have to necessarily be, you know, inundated with stress, super burdened, worried, full of anxiety about it. I think you can definitely do it if you're not already doing it. And then the other thing I would say is, why do it? What's the point? Why take on that added stress and responsibility? Well, it gives you more choices. It gives you more control. Ultimately, if you decide to make a decision, it's going to be your decision instead of somebody else's decision. And the probability of success for you doing it is extremely high. If you have a profession-specific business that you start, it's not like starting a pizza joint. A pizza joint's got like a 2 in 5 chance of success a few years in. That's more likely than not that it's going to fail. But if you look at something like a dental practice, it's a 99% chance of success. So I'm not saying don't be a partner in a practice. I'm not saying don't work somewhere long term if you absolutely despise the idea of running your own thing. You know, another thing is maybe it's not now, but maybe it's in the future. Maybe you eventually need to do a business. Maybe eventually you'll get working on a side hustle or something, because maybe for now it's better for you to have a stable employment arrangement where you know what to do and what the expectations are, and there's other things in your life going on that make not doing a business okay now, right? Okay, that's totally fine. But I think that if more people heard the stats on business ownership and like they saw the stats that I saw, you would be a lot more encouraged to take more risk in business. So if you're already a business owner, take a bigger risk growing what you have, or take a bigger risk like just learning and developing your skill set so that you can continue to work less or have bigger impact, whatever your goal is. So I just wanted to say a couple things here. So your probability of success, if you do anything side hustle-y or business owner-y, that's a word, is extremely, extremely high if you take the risk. A big benefit, and kind of honestly burden sometimes, is when you do your own business or you're a contractor, your time belongs to you instead of your employer. And that means there's upside and downside. The downside to that is if you don't go to the gym or something like that during the day, well, that's your fault. And I'm super guilty of that, let me tell you what. But like having time control is amazing. You're not accountable anymore to where you work. You're accountable to your business, your colleagues, and your customers, your clients, your patients. Now, I already mentioned the higher earnings that you get as a business owner. I already mentioned that our practice owner clients are 3x as wealthy as our non-practice owner clients. And it's not because the practice owners are like 3x smarter or anything. They just took a risk and they just became owners. That's the difference. I bet you anything that if you look at the average, like SAT scores, IQ tests, you know, performance in dental school or vet school or medical school, et cetera, and you line them up next to each other, I bet it's almost exactly the same in terms of all the scores as to whether or not you become a business owner or just stay in as an employee. Another big reason to become a business owner or, you know, learn about new business owner strategies for success is you can lower your taxes as a business owner. So if you really know the tax code, you can do loopholes, you can do write-offs, you can set up your own retirement accounts and do maximal benefits to those. You can do, for example, profit sharing into your 401k as well as a defined benefit plan and put up to $275,000 a year pre-tax into your retirement accounts. You can make sure you manage your taxable income in such a way that gets it low enough so that you get a QBI deduction, which is 20% of your business income that you can write off. And even if you're, you know, a professional services business, if you get your, you know, your taxable income low enough, you know, I think it's below about $200K or $400K as a couple when it starts to phase out. But if you can get that taxable income low enough, you can write off 20% of your business income. You can set up S corporations and legally dodge FICA taxes, which is Social Security. You can write off certain percentage of meals with clients. You can write off usage of your home for up to 14 days a year via the Augusta rule. You can sometimes write off things via Section 179 with your cars, with any kind of big equipment that you might purchase that's, you know, allowable to deduct. So there's all kinds of like great reasons, right? Another reason too, I'll throw out another one. When you become an owner, instead of making the employee percentage of pay, you're making the owner percentage of pay. So if you're an employed, you know, associate somewhere, you're probably collecting somewhere between 25 and 35% of the revenue you generate. But as an owner, you're probably collecting somewhere between 40 and 60% of the revenue you generate. And the simple reason why is because you are one of the owners instead of one of the employees. That's kind of where that comes from. Now, in the world of professional services, the good news is when you acquire a business, if you're acquiring a business below a certain size, you're probably not going to have to compete with private equity. If you're acquiring a business above a certain size, you probably will, and they can afford to pay higher multiples than you. So a real smart strategy is to go for something that's a little bit below the level that private equity becomes interested, and then buy that business and then expand it. And if you want to be really wealthy, what you can do is just, you know, acquire a business that's right below the level private equity would be interested in, but make sure and see if there's, you know, a lot of procedures that the practice doesn't do. And then add those procedures, make the business better, make it more efficient, put your imprint on it with strategies that business owners can use to make more money. That I'm going to share more of these in a second. And then you could buy the practice for whatever, 60 to 80% of revenues, and then turn around and sell it to private equity when you're ready to retire after you've 3 or 4X'd the revenue of the business for a 2 or 3X multiple of sales. So in other words, you could grow the value of the business maybe 9X, 10X, just by increasing the revenue over time, making it a big enough business that you have a multiple expansion, which means that somebody buying it would be willing to pay a higher multiple, right? 1X, 2X, 3X of sales than if you're selling it to another professional like yourself. So those are all like the exciting parts about why it makes sense to become a business owner. But I want to talk about specifically like some things that really like have caused me a ton of stress. And I want to also share some successes that I've had with student loan planners so that you can incorporate these as a business owner. So I want to talk about a few of these. I'm going to mention hiring and firing. I'm going to mention finding your profit. I'm going to mention your perfect audience, finding your perfect audience. I'm going to talk about how to price to that audience, how to protect what you built and are building, and then also what kind of lifestyle and what's your why. Just to go through a few of these, the HR part of it, hiring and firing. I will say that I have made so many mistakes with this. The best thing you can do is give someone a paid tryout. The perfect way to hire somebody is if you want to hire somebody at the front desk, literally bring them in and pay them to sit at the front desk for a day and give them a list of policies and instructions and see how they do. Are they proactive? Do they follow up? Are they detail-oriented? Are they organized? Do the people that interact with them have nice things to say? You would be shocked. If you can do tryouts, it'll save you at least 5 figures or probably 6 figures in hiring expenses and mistakes. So I've hired by resumes before, always a mess, always random. You never know who's going to be successful. But when you do the test assignments, you cut out a ton of the guesswork. And the thing is what I've learned is like if you pay, you know, a wage for something, you could easily find somebody for a given wage that is 10x as productive as somebody who also would work for that given wage. And it's really hard to predict who that's going to be. In the world of employment, you know, there are real things that people deal with in their life. I don't want to minimize those, but to be honest, there's also a lot of folks who are just not as skilled at a given job. And it's just hard. It's hard to know. It's hard to predict. It's hard to, you know who's going to be reliable, who's not going to be reliable. And the HR stuff is really the test assignments, say just an absolute slam dunk way that you can take your profitability way higher than it's been before. And speaking of profitability, let's talk about profit just in general. So most people don't know their numbers. Most people have no idea how much profit margin you make on procedure A or procedure B, right? And you might say, you shouldn't know that. That's unethical to think about profit margin with procedures. Oh, really? Well, the hospital doesn't. In fact, all these hospitals, one of the reasons of consolidation in healthcare systems is because they literally go look for feeder hospitals that have a high probability of feeding into the central hospital high profit margin procedures and surgical services. So literally they might go buy a money-losing hospital just because they know that that hospital has X number of heart procedures, X number of transplants, X number of NICU stays, et cetera, and that they know that those will get referred to the main campus where they'll make a lot of money. So that's why you see groups like Penn Medicine going around buying up all the regional hospitals around there because of how much profit margin exists with these higher value services that get billed for a lot more money. So if the big healthcare systems and the big private equity groups are doing it, you should do it because you'll be more ethical than them. And so if you think about what are your lowest margin services, well, do those lowest margin services, are they necessary? Should you be doing them? Should you be hiring folks that are more junior than you to help do those procedures to increase those margins or at least free up your time to go spend it on something that's higher margin? There's a lot of things that people don't even think about. I do student loan consults not because it's the best use of my time, but I occasionally do student loan consults now with a pretty limited schedule just because I really enjoy it. So the other thing is it's not all about money, right? Like if you enjoy something, shoot, you should reserve some time in your day to do it because it just makes you happy. That's something that I really believe in. But at the same time, you got to understand what the implications are of how you use your time and the profit margins that you'll make. So identify your profit. Figure out, you know, what are your highest margin services? What are your lowest margin services? And then figure out if should you be doing those low margin services or could you refer those out? Or, you know, what's the best strategy to handle those? Now, target audience, picking a target audience and serving them well. I'll say this, I picked all millennials when I first started a business. Literally, that was my market, all billion millennials, 2 billion millennials around the earth. I guess, theoretically, you could say the 100 million of them in the United States or something. My business was terrible. It's a random blog on the internet. You can probably look it up and find it. I never made more than a few thousand dollars in a year on it, and I was working 30 hours a week on it, just like responding to comments and writing the blog posts and just thinking up things to write about and doing research. And man, I was so involved in this. It's kind of funny to think about. Like I was working so hard and making no money and having very little impact, right? Beyond the few thousand people a month that read the blog. But then I, you know, took my Excel skills, which not everybody has, took my like, you know, knowledge and willingness to learn about student loans, which not everybody was willing to do, and jumped into this student loan field where specifically helping people that are disproportionately medical folks, but not all medical folks, but people who have a lot of student debt, right? And so I built popularized a system for getting student loan advice in an efficient way. When I focused on having a specific target market, that's how things really exploded for me, you know, with business. So how does that apply to you? For you, I would suggest having some sort of niche. And it could be I provide quality veterinary services to the people of South San Francisco Bay Area. Like it could be like a geographic niche. It could be a type of patient niche. So maybe if you do that South San Francisco area, maybe your cat hospital, right? Or maybe your dog hospital. Or maybe you do exotic pets. I'm just throwing out these different ideas for vet med, but like what would be even better is to narrow that down even further. So you are a exotic pet hospital for the South San Francisco Bay Area for cash pay customers or something like that, right? Now, the only thing is, you know, you do need to have the niche you pick, the target audience you pick, be big enough that it can support you, right? If you're so niched that you've got, you know, five potential customers where you want to serve, I mean, don't do that, right? But what I find is very rarely do people niche hard enough. It's most common that people are like, I'm a dentist in Phoenix, Arizona. Come see me. Well, if that's your only differentiator, there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of other options out there. And how will you stand out from the crowd? And how will you, you're going to have to work your tail off with marketing. You're going to have the best website in the world, the best Instagram account, the best social media. You're going to have the best customer service team and hope they don't turn over. Meanwhile, if you go to a different place, like rural Texas, I had a client once who had this, bought this practice in rural Texas. The primary owner couldn't do extractions. He could. And so he just realized, oh, wow, there's a bunch of revenue that instantly I'll make, like that I won't have to pay for. And so he did that. He, you know, set up a website. I don't even think the practice had a website. I think he set up some sort of reviews on either Facebook or some sort of place where a lot of the people in his town frequented. And it was like, boom, all of a sudden he's got reviews. He's got a website. He's doing extractions when there were none being done before. And because there's no competition within like a 50-mile radius, he's the only game in town. So he doesn't have to work that hard finding customers. It's like you have to actively hate him to not want to come to his practice and pay whatever he wants pretty much because he can charge a cash pay practice in a lot of cases because, you know, he doesn't have to worry about, you know, insurance competition. I think that even if you're in an area that has a lot of Delta Dental PPO stuff, maybe there's some things that you could do with your power of your niching. Maybe. I'm not saying this is going to be the case for everybody, but maybe there's a some sort of niche that you could provide that you don't have to worry about Delta Dental PPOs anymore. That's the power, at least, of having the exercise of thinking through, what is my target audience? What do they like? What kind of insurance do they have? What kind of experience do I want to be able to provide them? What kind of team do I want to have around me to deliver an excellent experience to this target audience? And again, it doesn't have to be anything in particular. It can be geography. It can be, gosh, I mean, use your imagination, right? It could be a certain cultural background, right? I remember I had one person who did a startup serving primarily Spanish-speaking families that had access to Medicaid, and he was making a couple million dollars in the first few years simply because no one else had thought about doing that in that particular geographic area for that particular community, and the reimbursement rates were good, and he just had all of his marketing focused on serving that specific community, and before you know it, he's making a couple million dollars a year. So, I mean, this is the power, again, of having an ideal niche that you are known for and that you can be, instead of Mr. Student Loans, right? Like some people joke that that's my nickname. Instead of Mr. Student Loans, you can be Dr. Pick a descriptor in your head that you think is a good target audience. Now let's talk about pricing. So if you come out and immediately charge $600 for something, like for student loan consults, obviously our student loan consults are about $595. So if I'd come out at the very beginning of this business and started charging that, I would have heard crickets. I would have had very few people take me up on that service. Now, I would have had real good profit margins and the ones who said yes, but maybe I'm doing 3 or 4 student loan consults a week instead of like 30 when I first started. And if I had done that, I would not have gotten the repetitions. I wouldn't have built efficiencies. I wouldn't have grown. I would not have hit the level of speed that I needed to get at to show other people that I would eventually hire, hey, look how fast and efficient it can be to deliver extraordinary student loan advice. But I wasn't extraordinary right away. Like I really benefited from all those people who trusted me and paid me, even though I wasn't that great yet. And I was able to take what I did know and save people still enough money that they liked it. And that, you know, lower price I charged initially led to having people have a lot of positive reviews, which allowed me to build a brand. And so I think the same thing is true when you're starting your business is initially you don't want to come out with a really high price. At least I would dissuade it if you want to grow. If you want to just make a profit and you eventually know that you'll figure it out, it's fine. But, you know, pick a reasonable price that you'll still make money on and then focus all your efforts on coming up with like transactions, systems, like methods, right? Like figure out ways to, you know, try to be the best and doing less work and less work and less work if you can. And then when you do that, what's going to happen is you're going to get pricing power. So you build up your reputation, you build up, you know, people start to trust you, people start sharing your information with friends, you get word of mouth referrals. Then what you can do is announce that you're going to increase your prices on a good or service or on the whole practice. And then you can use that to incentivize demand. You can get a lot of people that jump into the practice and start signing up simply because they want to avoid the price increase. And then you get more full, get more efficient, get more reputation, get better reviews. And then you can justify that price increase. Next, I'm going to talk about protecting what you have, growing your business versus, growing and protecting your business through a lot of different ways. So one way is legal. Definitely hire a lawyer. I wish I had hired lawyers many, many times in my life as a professional. Don't think that just because you don't have money means it's not a good investment. Like it's a great investment because at least like lawyers tend to tell you like the conservative answer, but it's great to hear the conservative answer because if the conservative answer is still not that scary, then you're in great shape. And if the conservative answer is kind of scary, they'll at least tell you how to make it less scary. So an example of this is when you write up your employment contracts, like make sure those employment contracts are actually real contracts. If you're going to hire W-2 people, just make sure you've got job descriptions. Make sure you've got plans for performance improvement plans if you have to fire somebody. Make sure you've got stuff written down so that there's like something to hold somebody to. Hey, you're not doing your job. Well, what do you mean I'm not doing my job? You never gave me a job description, right? That's how problems happen when it comes to things that affect your business. And in terms of insurances, you can protect yourself with every insurance under the world, but I would definitely get malpractice or E&O. I would get data breach coverage. I would get all that kind of stuff to try to protect yourself. And you can't protect yourself from everything. So have your LLC, keep your assets segregated. Make sure you've got a separate credit card account for your business, a separate bank account for your business, and keep all that distinct from yourself. And then in terms of what other services you might offer, so it's not just protecting yourself from a legal perspective. It's also protecting your revenue streams by making sure that you've got other options on the table just in case everything falls apart. So you know, just full transparency, what was one of the reasons we started a financial planning company? Well, it was right around before they came out with the SAVE plan. I was thinking, well, we built this big audience that we've invested millions of dollars in over the course of the past several years. What if Biden just comes out with a plan that's like 10 years to forgiveness, 400% of the poverty line, nobody has to pay anything? Will people still need student loan advice? I don't know. And so I was like, well, can we provide excellent financial planning for a fairly low cost with all the efficiencies and the speed and the impact that we've learned from Student Loan Planner's business on like financial planning? And I thought, yeah, I think we can. And so that's why one of the reasons we got into it was a way to ensure that I could keep our amazing team together, to keep everybody employed. That was one of the motivations. Other businesses were maybe more for diversification and also because I felt like we could add something of value to it. So why do we have a mortgages advertising business? It's because, you know, especially when I started it, there was not any way really to see easily like what mortgages and what bank options existed for people that are going for a doctor mortgage. You know, the low down payments, friendly for student loan borrowers, et cetera. So it seemed like a natural thing to do. Disability insurance. Why do we get into that? Well, I felt like sometimes disability insurance brokers would be like, what do I do with this like $2,000 a month IDR payment? Like, do I protect against it or do I not? Like, do I sell a student loan rider for this person with federal student loans going for PSLF, or do I not sell the student loan rider? So it was enough of like a confusion among like brokers out there that I was like, maybe it would make sense to do this, to actually have our own like ability to do on occupation disability insurance quotes. And as long as you can do it in an ethical way that doesn't cause anybody to get worse service or worse pricing, then it makes sense. Let's get into it. That's kind of the way that I think about getting into new business ventures. And for you, I think this could help you a lot. You could think through, well, what other services could I get into that I could credibly have a value added to my niche, right? So obviously, if you're in pediatric dentistry, don't get into sleep apnea, right? But maybe you're in some sort of dental group and, you know, and again, forgive me, I'm not a dentist, obviously, but you know, if you can add some sort of extra product or service that's relevant for your target niche and you think you can do it well, and you think that, you know, it's a very easy add-on that will add value to your niche, then why not do that? Why not protect yourself with a different source of income, something that's maybe outside of the insurance reimbursement world, and something that you can have additional profit, have additional margin, have additional resources to hire better team members that'll take stress off your plate even more. And then just to give you like the last thought here, what lifestyle are you building? Why are you doing this, right? You know, are you just doing it to make money? You will probably make more money as a business owner, but that's not a good reason to do it. Are you doing it because you want more control of your time? What kind of design do you want for your lifestyle, like for your business? Do you want a lifestyle business or a growth business? Sometimes it's hard to figure that out. I mean, I have no idea which one I'm still running and I'm still doing this. So it's not like you have to figure it out immediately, but think through your business and your design of your business. You know, I was doing consults like all the time in the mornings early, like 7 a.m., starting 7 a.m., 7:30 a.m. back in the day. And then I stopped to think about it and I was like, well, I've got a lot of responsibilities getting the kids ready in the morning. We're always like rushing. We're always working really hard to get the kids to wherever they need to be. I was like, does this really make sense to like take meetings like early in the morning where I'm feeling like I'm running around, like my head's going to pop off? No, it doesn't make sense. And I'm in charge, right? So like, okay, no meetings before 10 a.m., you know, and then way bigger quality of life increase. So that's like the benefit that you can have. No one's going to force you to open at 8 a.m., you know, if you have your own business. You can decide if you would rather make less money in exchange for a better lifestyle, right? If you want to have Friday afternoons off, like you can do that. And that's the reason I wish more people would get involved as business owners or self-employed 1099 contractors, is because of all kinds of opportunities like this. So now the part of the pod where I just let you know, hey, why did I talk about this business thing today? For a very short amount of time, it's expiring this Thursday at midnight when this comes out. When this is, you know, when this comes out, it's like Thursday at midnight. This is when this expires. We've got a business course built for student loan borrowers called Double Your Profit, Lower Your Stress. This has got like 8x as many tips as I've shared in the podcast today. And it represents like the combination of everything I've learned that I think that can help you in your business journey. If you're going to start a business or you're growing your business, or you're already a business owner, it's got tips in there for everybody. And it's got stuff that I think will save you 5 or 6 figures. So this is something that we're running a discount on it, and it's only open for enrollment until this Thursday at midnight. And the link for that is studentloanplanner.com/profit. So studentloanplanner.com/profit. If you go to there, it's going to give you the discount code. Keep in mind, if you have a 1099 business or you have an S-corp business or LLC, you can write this course off. So that means it is, in addition to the discount we're giving you, in addition to that discount, you're also getting your federal, state rate, and 10% for IDR that you can combine and write off as well. So it's really kind of a massive discount, and it's something that I think is going to teach you a ton of money, and it's going to really transform how you do business. At least one of the tips will be extremely relevant for you, and you're going to be like, why didn't I think of that sooner? Why didn't I implement that sooner? I could have saved $50,000 if I'd known that earlier this year. So that's what I think you're going to find if you take this course. Double your profit, lower your stress. Again, studentloanplanner.com/profit. And yeah, you've got until Thursday at midnight this week. I guess technically Thursday at 11:59 p.m. and maybe we'll make that Pacific time just so everybody has an opportunity to get that discount that wants it. studentloanplanner.com/profit. If you're interested in business at all, this will teach you a ton of stuff that I've learned and you'll get a ton of value out of it, I think. So double your profit, lower your stress. I think this is one of the courses I've had the most fun creating because of the very niche specific group of people that it applies to, which is our current and aspiring business owner audience in our group. So thank you everyone for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast, studentloanplanner.com/profit. Have a great rest of your week.